And when we talk about making life work when it doesn't, it's because usually what people are doing, they're fighting life. And most of society fights life. They don't like the way it is. And whenever you fight anything that really is the way it is, you're not going to win. You're going to lose. So if you're going to make life work when it doesn't, you have to understand how life functions. And then you have to see how you can become a part of it. And then you become a contributing factor. Usually human beings strive for three things. There are three things that they strive for. They strive for purposefulness, they strive for usefulness, and they strive for uniqueness. And we're going to be talking about this quite a bit today in a term I coined as forming. Forming. All right. Forming is nothing more than a coined term to represent the intense desire of a human being to form into something. It's the same thing that happens with little cells, you know, when an amoeba or paramecium, usually they're like a jelly-like substance, and they're constantly trying to form, but they're like jelly-like when you look at them under the microscope. And so when you view them, they're constantly trying to shape into a form and give itself substance and direction. And this is the exact thing that we human beings try. And whenever we speak of inferiorities, insecurities, whenever we speak of wondering about our purposefulness, our worth, our value, our uniqueness, what we're really saying is we're trying to find ourselves. Isn't that about it? We're trying to literally find ourselves. What you're saying is you're trying to form into something. And anything that resists the forming process is a threat to you. It becomes a situation whereby you're struggling to be purposeful, useful, and unique, and there are also these obstacles that are constantly threatening you and seemingly keeping you from it. Now, let me give you a few examples today, especially in our society, which is very difficult. All right, today, the entire concept of forming, where we could take root and solidify, is disappearing, at least from the viewpoint traditionally that we regard as roots. And it's not, really doesn't make a difference in life whether or not what we believe is real or not. As long as we believe it, it's real to us. And if it's real to us, that's what life is all about. All right, so we've had a radical change in the last 25 years where all the traditional solidifying forces are disappearing. And that very fact causes a threat, causes an obstacle in our forming. Now, some areas of consideration would be you have no community roots any longer. At one time when you were born and you were reared, you were right in one particular area. And you had friends who were support systems. And we all need support systems. And we'll try to talk about this a little bit later if I remember. But support systems are nothing more than a feedback that tells you what you are. In other words, if you have a friend and they associate with you and you have companionship, and it's someone who likes to be around you, it's telling you you've got a purpose, see, you're useful to them, and you're unique because it's you that they're attracted to. All right? All right, so when we, in times past, had communities where people weren't mobile, and they stayed in those communities, it was a strengthening force to us in our forming process. It answered those three questions of purposefulness, usefulness, and uniqueness. And it gave us substance. Right now, the latest figure I've had on it is that people tend to move about once in every 18 months. Now, it was only 5 or 6 years ago that people moved once every 5 years, which is a tragedy in itself. And now when you're talking about every 18 months, it's no wonder people don't know their neighbor. They don't want to get to know their neighbor. Do you know why? I'll tell you very simply. If you get to know someone too intimately, and in a mobile society, you then have to move, or they move, you are literally losing a part of yourself. So what you're actually doing, by keeping yourself aloof and isolated, you're virtually defensively protecting your form because of the rapid movement, see? Because you have to rip apart a relationship that was a support system. Do we understand? Okay. So what we try to do, we try to build our own little internal environment that cannot be destroyed. or to rip apart the forming system. And so any multiplicity of moving in a society just escalates the problem. That's the whole thing that Alvin Toffler talked about in Future Shock. And the only thing that's a shock about a mobile society is a little bit of you is disappearing every time a change happens. And this is disrupting. All right, that's just in communities. You can't identify with a community. You can't even identify with educational institutions. You know, it's rather amazing. You'll take teenagers who maybe have gone through 5 high schools in 1 4-year period of time. Every time they solidify some roots, they take some form, they're torn asunder, and they're ripped out, and a piece of them is there. And it's no wonder when they graduate from high school, they say, "Who am I?" Isn't it amazing? It wasn't too long ago people didn't ask these questions. It wasn't necessary to ask the question, "Who am I?" 20 years ago, people knew. Even if it wasn't real, they knew. And remember, I told you, it isn't necessarily what's real that makes the difference, it's what you believe that makes the difference. And so if you feel 20 years ago this is what you were, that you went to Ajax High School, and what made it better was the very fact that you were there. Because you were a part of it, you served in it, and you were formed in it. So you could identify with that school. All right, now it's the same thing in careers. You'll take especially with our larger corporations where there's so much transferring going on. So it's very difficult to identify yourself or form yourself. So you see the problem that it could cause you, right? Cause you a great deal of difficulty. Divorces is another very clear picture of that. What's so traumatic about a divorce is the fact that every time you divorce, you leave a piece of yourself. You actually lost something. Even if it's desired or favorable for you to escape a painful situation, what you've really done is you've left a piece of yourself, and it's never easy. I remember how much I used to dislike the Navy, because I just personally felt it was unproductive years. Now when I see it, they were highly productive years, but an 18, 20-year-old young man at that time who wanted what he wanted and he didn't want what life really was, I despised it. But it's a funny thing. The day I was being discharged and I was walking off that ship, I remember them trying to talk me into re-enlisting. And I, you know, no way, see, no way. And yet, when I walked off that ship, I felt actually sorry. And I never could understand what it was. And simply what it was is 2 years of me. I was leaving it. That's exactly what I was doing. So no matter how much the pull was to leave, the very fact that I was experiencing the loss, see, actually, I was vulnerable to being talked into reenlistment. And a lot of people who sign up and end up 20 years in the service, every time you see these movies, that this is it, no longer, it won't reenlist. And what it is they feel the loss of themselves. So everything you do in your life, the more mobility that's involved, whether in career, community, marriages, social relations, national, international relationships where nations are having difficulty forming, right? See, everything is a thrust to form and stabilize, to get a form in which you feel solid. Now, if you can keep that form, it gives you a sense of security and well-being. And whenever it's threatened, and whenever change does that, there is a stress factor. And that's why life is difficult to make work. All right? So this is usually the catalyst that causes the whole problem of change. We have difficulty coping with it because it's how much you're willing to get rid of. All right? All right, now, what can we do? See, if that's a reality, what can we do so that we can function in a life that doesn't seem to work? So we can't work. So it can work and we can function in it. Well, very simply this. I'm going to give you about 5 concepts that you can use in helping life work when it doesn't. When the choice is always, I'm going to gain a little, I'm going to lose a little. And you're going to see it all has to do with gain and loss in the struggle for forming. And I'll even explain to you, and I think it's rather revealing, why sometime when you get all excited about a new forming sometime, you want to tell everyone about it. and just bursting to tell everybody about it, and no one's interested in your new form. All right, first concept that you have to work with, if you're going to make life work when it really doesn't, is you have to have a realistic philosophy. And all I mean by a realistic philosophy, all we mean is, philosophy just means a way of life. And realistic means it's the way it is, a way of life the way it is, all right? All right, now that's all we're talking about. And what we're talking about, if our struggle to form is constantly in contradiction to the realistic way life is, you will always lose. In other words, if you don't understand how life really is and find the reality of it, and that you then put yourself into that reality and you try to find purpose in it, you try to find usefulness in it, and your uniqueness in it, if it doesn't line up with a realistic way of life, then you're going to find out you're going to lose more than gain. And it won't work. And it's exactly what the whole world is trying to do. They're trying to force a forming situation into an unreality. They're living in a utopia of fantasy. All right, now let's consider some realities so that you could address them to your own life and see how it is. Here are some of the things. What happened? Here's what your life generally produces, because these areas apply to everyone. It doesn't make any difference. It's you or me. We all experience these same events, all right? One thing we do experience from time to time is achievement. And all we mean by achievement is that we have answered those three questions that I posed in the beginning. The pursuit to find purposefulness, the pursuit to find usefulness, and uniqueness. And whenever we achieve, we answer those three questions. And we have now formed into that direction of achievement. So achievement is one thing people experience, and it usually elicits a joy, accomplishment, excitement. It makes life worthwhile because now you have a solid, tangible form. All right, another experience that we all have is failure. And one of the worst things that can happen to us as human beings is the denial of failure. And as long as we're in the process of denying failure, we again are not living realistically. So what we're doing, we're trying to form into something that doesn't fit in what life really is. And if you don't fit in what life really is, you're always going to keep losing. You're going to keep losing. You're going to keep losing. See? Now, it's very interesting. I try to develop. It's very difficult, but it's so contrary to us as human beings. Usually any time I confront a threat or an obstacle in my life, and that merely means a threat to forming or having some purpose, you know, or usefulness or uniqueness, usually the first response is, by most of us, is, it's not fair. Or the question is, what did I do? I didn't mean anything wrong. Okay? Or, why did it happen to so-and-so? They're worse than I am. You know, these are the normal identifying signs that we go through psychologically in our minds, don't we? All right, and I try, and it's very hard because it's so contrary to our human nature. I'll usually say, now, wait a minute. You goofed it. You alone. You did it. It's not working because of what you did. See? All right? Learning how to accept failure is vital to achievement and forming. Because your failures also make you what you are, as well as your achievements. And I think I've told you before the difference that I find between achievers and non-achievers. Achievers generally look at failures as learning experiences. And non-achievers look at them not only as a failure, but they look at them as if it's an attack on their form of worthlessness. You see that form attack, all right? So if you're trying always to grow and go to a certain pinnacle point, you've got to accept the realistic philosophy of what things are. Now, someone else might have contributed, but you had your part in it. if no more than poor ability of skill in human relationships. All right? And we all go through this. I bowl something like that maybe half a dozen times a week. See, then when I seriously think about it and I look at the relationship situation and I think, no, you didn't work with people the way they are. You worked with people the way you wanted them to be. And that's an unrealistic philosophy. And so you lose. All right? All right, another experience is we all experience excitement. And the more we experience achievement, the more excitement we get. Another is depression. We all experience what it's like to be depressed or down or fatigued at times. Another reality of life is illness. Now, you know, it's funny. When people get sick, being sick is a part of a way of living in this life. You know, you're going to get sick. There's no way you as a human being are going to be able to not only control yourself perfectly to live wholly whole, or are you going to be able to control all of society to make the environment in which you live wholly whole, right? So therefore, illness is a realistic way of this life. It happens to everyone sometime. Now, occasionally, I bumped into people. I knew some women. Well, one woman in particular who was about 75 years of age who'd never been sick a day in her life. Never even had a headache. In fact, when you talk to her about a headache, she doesn't even know what you're talking about. Never. 75 years. Never even had a cold. See? But she will get sick when she dies. Okay? So I'm trying to show you it is a reality for every human being. Now, I'm not telling you all to look forward to getting sick. I'm just telling you that it's a reality. It'll be there. Of course, another one, at times you have good health. It's a reality. You know, I remember speaking to one woman here about 2 weeks ago who was 53 years of age, and she told me, she says, you know, this is the best years of her life. She says, out of all the years of her life at age 53 has been the best that life has ever been. Because that's when her forming was the most stable. She found purpose, she was useful, and she saw her uniqueness in it. And she was healthy at that time. Now, I don't know, maybe a week after we talked, she got sick. See, but the point is, at that point, she was healthy. All right, another thing is death. And, you know, we go through the entire syndrome of not facing the realities that we will die. We as individuals. See, I'm bringing out not only the positive aspects, I'm bringing out some of the other realistic aspects of life that are real. I'm trying to help you to see a realistic way of living, of a life that is destined not to work, how you can make it work, and I haven't even gotten to the point there yet, okay? All right, another reality for all of us is change. It's changing, and I can count on this. Probably some of the things you're thinking about right today are going to be different tomorrow. And a little piece of you is going to have to be given up. That's exactly what's going to happen. And another experience you're all going to have is growth. In some cases, too much growth, huh? If it's physical. All right, so these are just a few of the realistic facts of our human life. And it's to the degree we accept or refuse to accept them that plays a great part in whether or not we can make life work when it doesn't. All right? Now, you've got to start with that. And I always start with this. It doesn't mean when the realism happens that you're going to like it. It just means you'll understand it because you've already decided it's realistic. And there's quite a difference between understanding realism and accepting it and blindly refusing to face it. Because when you blindly refuse to face something, and it will happen because it is life, then you have to fantasize. Then your forming never becomes real or stable. All right, now, we're getting down to a process that really starts to answer how to harmonize with the life process, realistically. And that's going to be Roman numeral 2. And it's the second concept. Out of everything that I've said, and if you analyze it, the uprooting, the changes, the gain, the loss, the seeking for forming, It all means that life does offer one thing, and that if you follow after this one thing as your goal, then you'll make life work. All of these factors that I brought out to you produce one thing if you work with it realistically. It produces growth. That's what life has to offer. That's literally what it has to offer. I don't care what psychologist you talk to, what philosopher you talk to, religionists you want to talk to. They will all agree that life demands one thing. It demands growth in every life age you experience. It demands it. It doesn't even ask you whether you want to. You either accept it or you fail. You either grow, or what you experience then is a fantasy, and then you never know what your form is. And when you don't know what your form is, then you're highly uncomfortable because you don't know what purpose you have in life, you don't know whether you're useful, and you don't know anything about your own uniqueness. And that's what human beings are striving to try to attain. All right? So what I'm going to give you now is explain the growth process, a little formula, so that you can understand. And that's Roman numeral 2, is to explain, I want to explain the growth process. All right. Growth process, obviously, the definition, and I think I might have mentioned this before to some of you, the growth process, whenever you're growing, the first thing that's obvious, what's obvious if you're growing? What's one thing that's very obvious when you're growing? You're changing, so you're becoming what? Different. You're becoming, in the growth process, if you are growing, you are virtually becoming something that you weren't. Correct? All right, if I'm becoming something that I wasn't, then what do I have to do with what I was? What do you have to do? Let it go. Very true, see? So if I'm becoming something that I wasn't, then whatever I was has to be disengaged. And that's a feeling of what? Loss. Exactly. And this is why when people lose, even if it's a favorable occurrence, let's take the example that you're a foreman in the plant in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. All right? Yay for Pittsburgh. I see people from Pittsburgh here. Okay. See? Now that's interesting. Isn't that interesting? Now why did they respond? And I hope you don't mind me using you a little bit. All right. Why were they so excited when I said Pittsburgh? It's a part of them. See, exactly right. See, that was part of their forming was there. See, so that's how it happens. All right, now, let's say that you're a foreman in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the vice president of the company calls you in and says, John, you've been with us now for 15 years, so you've been living in Pittsburgh for 15 years, all right? Maybe you were 20, you grew up in Pittsburgh, and that's 35 years old now, and you've been working for 15 years in this company. He said, you have done such a magnificent job, such a good job. We're moving you to Portland, Oregon. Okay? And you're going to become now the director of this division that you've been specializing in canning sardines. Okay? Or whatever. Now, what kind of feelings would you have? Mixed, right? I mean, you're excited. You've a new growth experience, achievement, right? Excitement. At the same time, loss, failure, giveaway, right? And so you come home and you find out also they say you're getting a $5,000 a year raise. That adds a little cream to the pie. See? All right? And so then you come home and say, honey, we're moving to Portland. She says, what? The kids are in school, you know, and all the rest that goes with it. And then he tries to explain all this new growth that he's experienced. See? He's become something that he wasn't. And because what he's becoming is something that actually he desires. It's a sign of achievement. It proves his purposefulness, his usefulness, and his uniqueness. And if the wife doesn't identify with it, and the children, they become the losers. You see how that works? And that's why you like Pittsburgh. See? Because you left a little bit there. All right. So here's what I just explained, the whole process. Now I'm going to go step by step with it. All right. All we mean under explain the growth process under Roman numeral 2, we'll put an A. All right. First, a new experience. A new experience starts a new forming process of you. A new form. That's what you're taking on. A new form. Now, if it's one that's desirable, attached to it are the sensations or feelings of excitement, like we talked about, right? Achievement. That's what it's showing. And this is a natural tendency by everyone. It's a growth experience, and it's exciting. But in the beginning, you haven't taken full form yet. And so what you're trying to do is burst out of this form. And it's not even solidified. See? Now, it's very difficult for others to identify with it because you're the only one experiencing the forming. And the only ones who can really understand you are those who are taking a piece of the experience that's starting to affect their growth as well. And that's why one of the very vital points of in human relationships, and this is why things do not work in the world, is since everyone uniquely experiences their own growth and does not necessarily mean everyone else is, that when you try, because of excitement, to express it or share it, you get a lot of resistance. So the way that you can function and make others agree on your new form is when they take a piece of it too. And if they can't receive a piece of that new growth experience, it's very difficult for them to identify with it. And they might even look at it as a threat. And you don't even mean to threaten anyone, see? Because you're just bubbling all over. Now, isn't this what happens with us in life? Usually all the things when we're little children, every new growth experience, you know, there are a multiplicity of growth experiences when you're little children. And every new little experience, you want to share it, you want to tell everybody, and you want to let everyone know. Look who I am. Look what I've got. Look what I've become. All right? This is what you want to do. And pretty soon you find out that people start to stop you. And as they stop you, you become more internal. And before you know it, you become more isolated. Correct? All right. So what usually happens where people have difficulty in the beginning of a new experience is the tendency to express itself too quickly. And that's what I will put down as B, expression. The desire to be expressive. And when we see introverted people many times, they're usually individuals who have just resisted so many obstacles in their growing years in life to expression, they lose all drive to be expressive. And so they become very internal and isolated. Nations do this. Companies can do this. You know, it just depends how much threat they've experienced to their forming. So a big key to making life work in a society where it doesn't is to contain your expression when you're just forming. Expression, just expression. A is new experiences, new forming, and it produces excitement and achievement. And B is expression. And by expression, we just mean that inner feeling to share, to give out with what we're experiencing is growth. This is all it is. Nothing more than that. And it must be held back. If you don't learn how to control it, then you're going to run into all kinds of troubles because it really doesn't have a new form yet. It's just starting the form. Now, there's this man who's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and who was told he's now going to be a director of a division, all right? It hasn't happened yet. He still lives in Pittsburgh. And he's still really a foreman of the company until he moves and takes over his new responsibility, correct? But the desire is to let everybody, you know, so many people even get into financial trouble this way. He's getting a $5,000 a year raise. What do people normally do when they're told they're getting $5,000 a year raise? Spend it. Now, what's unrealistic in that philosophy? You don't have it. And then what if 5 days before the move, he gets called in by the vice president and say, sales are down in that area, we don't need a director of that division, so we'll just have to hold you in abeyance, and you'll stay here and be the foreman. Then what? You eat crow, right? You surely do. Okay, so you see the tendency to be expressive too quickly in a new growth, in a new forming period, can be highly, highly dangerous. Now, in business, what they simply do is this, is they say that whenever they make a sale, they say until they have the money in their hands, they don't regard it as a sale. And all that's saying is, until that new forming or growth experience becomes a reality. And that's where we get back to the realistic philosophy. Until it becomes a reality, it cannot really be a true growth. And what life is all about is growing. That's exactly what it's all about. All right, so the C after B, after the expression, so what we really need in this new forming process of growth is containment. Containment. What you have to do is you must resist the expression. And there are energies inside of you. They want to explode, and they want to express it. But you have to contain it until the time when it's a true reality of the new form. In other words, when you've really become what you are becoming. Now, when they move from Pittsburgh to Portland, all right, and he is director, and he is running the function, then he has severed the loss of what he had to leave, see? He now then can begin to express himself because it's become a reality. It goes back to realistic philosophy. How many of us live on dreams? Anyone here? Oh, you do? All right, now do you know why? As long as you're living on dreams, instead of forming new growth realities, you're going to do what with your life? You'll stagnate. It won't work. It just won't work. And that's a hard lesson. Because I'll tell you, there's so much more excitement all the time in the planning than the reality. There's nothing wrong with planning, and you need planning, if you don't accept it as reality until it happens. How many times have you gone on a vacation, made all the plans, and when you got there, it wasn't the way you thought? Or you expected it to be. I remember the times that I hear people going to Hawaii. In fact, I was talking in person just last week, and they were telling me about their experience in Hawaii. They said, Hawaii is beautiful, but it wasn't the way they thought it was going to be. You know what they thought. They thought they were going to see girls with hula skirts and ukuleles, see, and coconuts and pineapple, see, instead of Dole manufactured cans. See, and they have more there than we have here, see. All right? Now, that's where people run into trouble with life, is they don't live in true growth forms, in what you really are at the time. And that's why when you feel a new experience of forming, you must learn to contain yourself. And I'll tell you, if I've seen any ingredient in successful people, is the ability to hold back until it really happens. See? Which brings us to the next step, which is actually controlled expression. D. D. D is controlled expression. All right, and controlled expression is nothing more than now you have a realistic form and you're starting to let it touch other people. All right? Now, let me tell you the support systems we need. If you want an interesting little book on that, it's called, let me get this one. Boy, I've read so many, I'm trying to think of the ones. By Just Lair. I know the one, I Ain't Much, But I'm Getting Better. Yeah, that's the one. I Ain't Much, But I'm Getting Better. And all he's talking about is a support system. And a support system means that you need a feedback system that tells you what you are. In other words, since you live in a time when everything is in such upheaval, you do have to develop some pretty strong internal relationships. If a person can have maybe four or five true friends in which they can express themselves without fear of retaliation, fear of threat, an honesty of feedback that's true, and where you could accept that feedback from them because you know they're a friend. That's a support system, and people need support systems. See, because since growth is a constant, what? Changing process, it's always before we come into a new form that we need assurance. We need support. We need something to hold us up. And so if a person in their life, you don't have to have everyone like you. In fact, people who truly try to get everyone to like them will what? Fail. Because that is an unrealistic philosophy. It's living in a non-real reality. But to have two, three, or four, or five friends, and they might be three or four sets in your lifetime. In part of your lifetime, when you're a child, you have some solid support systems with some buddies, all right? Maybe in your teen years, it'll be another group. In your adult period, another. In your elderly age, another. But these are support systems that help you go through the growth process. And that's why one of the real causes of loneliness, which is one I'm trying to research now, I would like to do a lecture on loneliness. But one of the problems with loneliness is not the fact that you're alone, because you could be lonely in a crowd. You could be lonely at a party, surrounded with people, but it means you have no support system. A person who has a support system can be all alone and feel perfectly secure, just in knowing that support system is there. See? Because when they feel the lack of form, they're unsure of themselves about their purposefulness, their usefulness, and their uniqueness. If there's no support system, you're going to feel lonely. Once we start to have controlled expression in this growth process, in other words, we've gone through a new experience, new forming excitement, we've wanted to express ourselves, but we've learned to contain it until we get true form. Now we're using controlled expression. And that has to be based on realities. We start giving out with what we really are. See? You know, after a while, you take Muhammad Ali. You know, in the beginning, when he kept telling everyone, I'm the greatest, how did people feel? How did they feel? Turned off. All right, now when he says, I'm the greatest, I mean, it still doesn't make you love when somebody's tooting a horn. But what do you believe when he says it? You know he is. I mean, he is. He's just said what he is. See, the only, it would be better if someone else said it. But he's saying what he is. And you are willing to accept it because you say, you know, he delivers. He delivers. All right. Now, after controlled expression, E, what you experience, E, is gain. You've actually now become something that you weren't. Just something that you weren't. You really are this now. See, you really are this. So the very fact you now have gained or grown, you've experienced growth. What have you also now experienced? Loss. And so F is loss. So you've now just seen the entire growth process of how we grow. A is we have new experiences with new forming that creates excitement because of achievement. B is a desire for expressing it. C, you realize you have to contain that expression because the true forming hasn't happened yet. You haven't really become what your dreams are envisioning yet. It's not really a service or a true purpose or true usefulness to show your uniqueness. So you contain it, and then you start to control the expression, which is D, and then E, you experience the feeling of gain, which is growth, which means also you're willing to give something up and you lose. And this is what life is about. It's exactly what life is about. Now, I want you to take one little test. All of you have pencil and paper? Okay? Okay. I just want you to say one thing to yourself. What are you right now? Right now in life, right at this focal point, that you weren't 10 years ago? Can you write down one thing? Single? Okay. You've grown. All right. Write down one thing that you are right now that you weren't 10 years ago. So you see, really, if you really look at it, if you want to take a little experiment with yourself, you can go back in your whole life and write your whole life on constantly what you are becoming and where you are right now. And then you'll see where you are and you'll have experienced growth because life demands it. Now, that's why you'll always find people who are not understanding what life demands realistically, that they'll look for cop-outs. Alcohol, drugs, workaholics, anything where you cannot experience the full gamut of what life offers in a way that it can give you its benefits, then you're hung up on something. You've got some escape mechanism, and it's a cop-out. You're because you're refusing the demands of life, which is growth. Roman numeral 3. This is very important, and it's discounted today. Moral values or an ethic. I know you can't read this, so you just have to go by what I say. Moral values or an ethic. Now, let's understand what we mean by moral values. Now, for people who have a religious way of life that they follow, other people maybe will be atheistic and yet still have an ethic about life, okay? Now, all we mean by a moral value is there to keep you free so you can form. The purpose of a moral value is to keep you free so you can form. In other words, in a life that basically doesn't work, we don't need to create more obstacles. They are already there in a society that isn't working or functioning. And we've got economic problems today. You have international problems to bring peace, right? You have stability problems in the world. You have all kinds of problems in a society that is not working. You don't need any more changing growth experiences to have new forms, all right? If you have moral values or an ethic, it tends to diminish the obstacles of threat towards you forming. So when we talk about moral values and an ethic, it means you're not creating your own obstacles. And so you've got to have a solid foundation of morals. The respect for people's property, the respect for people, honoring people, see. All the other aspects of whatever your religious way of life would require. And if you follow them, it isn't so much if you belong to a denomination or institution or a body that it benefits the institution, which it does do, but it directly benefits you in growing. And that's why if you start with anything, you have to start with moral values. Because before you even start with Roman numeral 1, you already have to have your head on as far as your ethic is going to be concerned. Is that understood? Every time I have to bring that out, because in most things that people do, the minute you don't start with a moral value and you're grounded in it, no matter how anyone else is. In other words, if you were the only human being on the earth who did it, it's your moral value. And you're committed to it. You're established in it. It will keep you free to that degree of your growth or your forming. All right? That's where you have to get. You have to get there. It's not contingent on any other human being. Because it's your forming, it's your growth experience, isn't it? Is that right? Okay, so you've got to have that. All right, now, I want to give you a little bit about structure awareness. Structure awareness. Give me a little time to erase this. Roman numeral 4 is structure awareness. Very vital. Structure awareness. Now, what do we mean by that? All we mean by structural awareness is a realistic, we'll put A underneath, a realistic feedback system. And that tells you what you are. But if it isn't a realistic feedback system, then you don't really know. Now, let me give you an example. Anytime you get your paycheck, how do you feel? Good. Why? What? You got some money for a change. All right. But what does that tell you? Pardon? It's a feedback to value on your job. And frankly, that's why people work for money. It's not only for things that it gives them, it's also psychologically what it tells them. And it's the two. It's not only what money can do for you as a source of power, and that's what it is. It's a source of power, a source, one of many, all right? But it also is a feedback system that tells you value. Why do you think people go in such a state of depression if they can't get work for a long period of time? Pardon? You can't meet their needs, but let's say you're on welfare and you have your needs. It decreases your value. What it is a threat to your forming. It's a threat to the growth process. That's why you usually find a society that's in a welfare state tends to be apathetic, because it doesn't have any structural awareness of what it is as a form, as a stable, purposeful, useful, unique being. All right? That's what's lacking. And pretty soon they become more and more apathetic, even though their needs are met. But there's no real, true, realistic feedback system that's coming back and saying, you do have a purpose, you are useful, you are unique. All right? But if it's based on the fact that the paycheck is given to you because you were purposeful, because you were useful, and you were unique, that's excitement. All right, so what we're saying is this. It is not the only feedback system that's realistic. But the reason I use that is everyone can identify with that. All right? Let me give you a few other examples of how we could have structural awareness. And if we don't have some of these realistic feedback systems playing, we're constantly upset because we constantly don't know what we are. All right? One would be in a marriage situation where one gets constant feedback from the other mate of the realization of their value. Does that give structure? Children who constantly get feedback of value from their parents tell the children what? But, all right, good is fine. But what is it telling them about themselves? They're worth something, or they have a structure or a form. You know, it's a funny thing how many people cry out and say, I don't want to just be a number. You know, people would not mind being a number if a number told them they were something. That's the problem. It isn't the fact that you're Z0159. It's because Z0159 doesn't say you're anything. So the objection is not to the number. That's a symbol. The objection is it doesn't have structural awareness. I forget who it was, whether it was the Kaiser or Bismarck back in Germany years ago, when the German nation went into a state of almost total collapse economically. And they had high rates of inflation and everything else. And one thing that he instituted that started to reverse the whole trend was he gave everyone a uniform. If you were a street cleaner, you got a uniform. If you're a waitress, you got a uniform. See? If you were a streetcar conductor, if they had them then, I don't even remember, you got a uniform. See? If you picked up the garbage, you got a uniform. Why would he do that? Yeah, it tells you what you are. Okay, that's structure awareness or a realistic feedback system. If I'm a streetcar conductor and I have a uniform that designates that, it is saying it is expression of what I am. All right? All right, so what you need in the growth or forming processes is you do need to have a realistic feedback system. And if you don't, that's probably where you're having your trouble. It's just like if you go to college, if you have no realistic feedback system, how you fit in that structure as a separate form, you're going to be in a state of unhappiness. That's what you'll be. All right? Is that clear? Okay. You've got to have that. All right. The other, under A, is B. And this is the last major one I wanted to bring out. Okay. The ability to achieve goals. The ability to achieve goals. Now, let me use another word for goals because, you know, it's become such a sophisticated, almost non-feeling term. A lot of times people get so tired of the word goals because it sounds so business-like. Now, I find they're using it in seminaries and theological studies. They've got whole courses for ministers on how to be goal-setting. Okay? I mean, it's getting to be so... It's nothing more than the ability to achieve hopes and dreams. Hopes and dreams. When we're talking about goals, we're just talking about your hopes and dreams, aren't we? And so when you say people are goal-oriented, you just mean that people would like to attain their hopes and dreams. Okay? And you have to have the ability to do that. Now, to do that, you have to simply do this. Taking, very vital, taking the responsibility yourself. In other words, if you're trying to accomplish a growth experience of a form, whose form is that? Anyone else's? So who else can be responsible for it? Can anyone else be responsible for it? Who's the only one responsible for it? You! Obviously, see? And you know, this is the biggest breakdown that I see in the growth process. Very few people take the responsibility for their own growth and forming. Most people, what they try to do is talk about external circumstances forming them, or structuring them, or helping them to grow. And they're the only ones who could take the responsibility. And whenever you pass that responsibility to someone else, how can they form you? How will they form you?
Their way.
Their way. Which doesn't align with what? The achievement of what? Of your hopes and dreams. It aligns with whose hopes and dreams? Theirs. And that's where you get a growth breakdown. That's usually where you get the growth breakdown. Now, it does not mean that you don't have support from others. It does not mean that you don't put yourself even under the leadership of some others. As long as it identifies with your hopes and dreams, then it is your responsibility and you're making the decision or the step. I mean, obviously, let's say you're having trouble with weight control and you don't want to grow anymore. Right? In fact, you want to lose a little. All right? And you're finding out when you take the responsibility totally on your own, you don't know the system. You just can't seem to make it work. So Jack LaLanne says, if you let us take charge, see, we'll get you to lose so you can grow. Okay? And you put yourself under their leadership. You would do so on the basis of what? First. Confidence in them that what? That they will deliver, all right? And as long as you see the results are going in that direction, you are taking the responsibility to allow them to lead you that way, okay? That's virtually it. So you really are taking charge of your own responsibility and your own hopes and your dreams. And usually when people get together and form groups, they do because they all have a common desire. So sometimes you have to form into bodies because you need massive support systems to accomplish. and other hopes and dreams are personal, unique ones that involve no one else, and then you have to take total achievement yourself. All right? Roman numeral 5 is a formula for growth. I gave you the growth process, but this is a formula. Formula for growth. All right. I've got it written down here. I just want to get it away. First, the formula is you have a goal, which is a hope or a dream. All right? All right. Then next, plus a gain, because if you're going toward that hope or a dream, there's a gain you're experiencing. Plus a loss, because there's always a loss. Plus an alternate. In other words, whenever you experience a loss, you have some alternate choices to make. If you're losing something and you're gaining something, you have to decide what the man from Toronto did. Am I willing to get the gain and accept the loss? So you have an alternate. You had alternatives, okay? Alternatives. Let's call it alternatives. All right? Plus direction, because once you decide the alternative, you start a new direction. All right, which equals growth. Okay, so Roman numeral 5 under, let's say, formula for growth, would put a capital A, would be the goal or the hope or the dream plus gain plus loss plus the alternatives between the gain and the loss gives the plus for a new direction, which equals growth. Okay? All right, and then out of that, the outcome is there's new acceptance because you're now something different, right? So there's new acceptance. We'll call this B under A. New acceptance, new earth, new earth, and new threats. All right, so all this means is now that there's a new growth, there's a new acceptance because there's a new form, there's a new worth, a new value, but also it develops new threats, and it recycles again. Okay, and that's Roman numeral 5. Okay, I think it's 12 o'clock. How about that? I guess they wanted me to say that we have just short of 500 people. We have full attendance, so you've been very nice. I hope you find it very useful, and that you use it, and have a nice day.